All right, we are right here live on the air. Yes, I corralled him. He's been everywhere. I think we could say that, couldn't we, Jeff? You've been everywhere.
It's been busy, yeah. But great to be in Greenwood County. Great to be back in South Carolina and not in the swamp, so to speak.
Yeah. I tell you what, the swamp has gotten swampier, it seems to me.
I think it has. I mean, they added water to it last week, 1.3 trillion gallons of it, so to speak, in money and a spending bill that's 2,200 pages.
Did you read the bill?
No, there was no way. I'd had less than 17 hours. I'm a fast reader. My staff's a fast reader. We broke it up into pieces, and we didn't finish reading it. Less than 17 hours, and, you know, this is the same thing we criticized Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats for doing with Obamacare is, you know, a small group of people crafting something, and then it rolled out without members of Congress having time to read it.
And, why did you do that? I thought you had a three-day. Didn't we have a three-day window we were supposed to have?
You know, we continue to not live up to the promises and pledges we made the American people when we asked them to give us the governing majority, and that's going to be in my book.
You're writing a book?
I'm working on it, yeah.
You're working on it? Yeah. Wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah, it's that's the gist of it, is that true believers, that, you know, there's a group of people that actually believe in the promises and pledges we make to the American people when we ask them to give us the governing majority. And I can just show instance after instance where, you know, we have not lived up to those promises.
So when you, well, I mean, I know you're hearing it from everybody. You hear it on your Facebook page. You hear it from individuals when you talk to them. You see them. What is the answer to this? I mean, you know, President Trump signed the bill and said, and then I will not ever sign another one like this, folks.
Well, we encouraged him to veto that one, and let's go back to the drawing board because, you know, even at that point on Friday when he was signing the bill, we still had not finished reading it.
Sure.
To tell you everything that was in it. There was no way in, that was probably 17 plus 24, so whatever that comes to, 41 hours. 41 hours we haven't read the bill at that point. It was less than that.
How do the American people believe? How do we believe that anything's going to change when you have a situation such as this? He signs the bill. Evidently, what was all over the news was he went to lunch with Mattis and he changed his mind.
Yeah, I don't know if it was optics and whether he ever originally intended to veto it when he sent that tweet out. I'm not in the mind of Donald Trump, but we encouraged him to veto it because we felt like we needed to start over. And
why
the more we find out
wire?
About this bill, the only thing I can think of is he is very concerned about the military situation, defense posture, and our ability to project our might. The world needs us to be a superpower again that we are capable of being. You've got China, Russia, North Korea, Iran are all global threats, and you throw in little groups known as ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Boko Haram or Abu Sayyaf or Hezbollah or Quds Force. You know, there are a lot of threats around the world, and if America has to deal with multiple threats, then we're going to have the ability. We have fewer airplanes, fewer ships, surface and subsurface, fewer Marines than we've had since the end of World War II in a lot of instances. And so I think President Trump gets that. There was such a plus up for military spending for those things. I think he recognizes, being commander-in-chief, the need, and that sort of overtook his other concerns. But if you read the bill, you see we're still funding Planned Parenthood. We're still funding sanctuary cities that are in violation of federal law. We gave $15 million to China. We gave $15 million to China for economic development, but we borrowed money from China to give back to them for yak farming in Tibet. I mean, really, we have an immigration issue in this country we need to deal with, border security and all that, but yet we gave like $12 million to Tunisia and Lebanon and Jordan to deal with the immigration issues that they're facing.
Yeah, aren't they building walls or something?
They're building walls with it.
And we can't build a wall
over here.
I read that, yes.
Yeah, and we're giving, I think, $12 million to Afghanistan to hire more female law enforcement officers when we need to put resource officers at our schools, at all of our schools, so somebody there can stop an active shooter. We have schools in this state and around this country that don't have RSOs because they don't qualify for them. And there's only so much manpower for the resource officers. But why are we giving money to Afghanistan to hire more female law enforcement officers when we really have a need here? Let's take care of the issue at home. And so a lot of frustration in that bill, and I voted no.
I know you did, but it wasn't enough.
It wasn't.
It wasn't enough.
No.
And
that's because all the Democrats voted for it.
Well, what do you, okay, everybody is talking about the midterm elections, the midterm elections. I know you have filed for re-election here. Are you enjoying being in Washington?
Did you just use the word enjoyment?
Yes, yes, because I think that if you love your, you enjoy, you have always enjoyed doing, but do you enjoy being there and seeing what's happening? And is there any hope for a change? We're going to be up for another bill in September, right?
September 30th.
Yep. Yeah. Are we going to put it off? Are we going to just add more money to it? I mean, you guys, I mean, I'm sorry, but you wait to the last minute to do things.
I talked about this at Rotary here in Greenwood a few minutes ago. Yeah, they operate by crisis, and that's how they force members to vote for things they normally wouldn't vote for. And this crisis governance is just terrible for the nation, terrible for us. Do I enjoy it? There are things, aspects of the job I enjoy. I enjoy a challenge. I enjoy the challenge of confronting Paul Ryan like I did in a private meeting and not letting him talk over me and getting my point across and say, hold on, Mr. Speaker, you know, I'm going to finish. Because you need to hear it and being that representative voice. So I enjoy the challenges. There are things I enjoy my colleagues. I enjoy the challenge on this new committee I'm on. But there are aspects, like we saw last week with the omnibus, that I don't enjoy. You know, it's just the job isn't as enjoyable as it probably once was for members of Congress. One part of that is we're forced to raise so much money to help the team. Yeah, that's a big part of, not mine personally, but a lot of members of Congress spend an exorbitant amount of time raising money for themselves and because they have a commitment to the National Republican Congressional Committee to help us maintain the majority. And I don't spend a lot of time doing that. My staff will probably tell you I need to spend more time doing that. But I'd rather work on policy and moving our nation forward and having those meetings with Paul Ryan and others trying to get the message across that I'm given when I'm back in the district from folks here in the 3rd District that they think leadership needs to hear.
Well, what is the future of Paul Ryan as the speaker?
You know, I read the same article you did, so that says he's going to step down. Mark Amaday from Nevada started that yesterday. I don't know. I really don't know. I can't speak for that. I do know from the article I read, says Steve Scalise is eyeing to become the speaker. I think Steve could be the speaker. I think he's got enough support, and he's definitely got my support because I've watched him, and I think a lot of him, and we have a strong relationship.
What do you think about, are you playing baseball this year?
At this point, I'm planning to, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, I just was curious.
But it's we talk about this a lot. I spoke about the baseball shooting today at a men's prayer breakfast. Members that are on the team talk about it regularly, whether we're going to play or not and where we're going to practice. Are we going back to that field? Well, I'm not going back to that field. You know, if I'm going to be part of the team, I want to practice somewhere else. Secret Service and Capitol Hill Police said, you're not going back to that field. But yet the coach wants to go back to that field because it's convenient for him. Too many members have, you
bad
know,
memories,
yeah, and that's just not going to be conducive. So,
so hopefully you'll be able to play. Yeah. But what do you the thing with the budget is causing a lot of angst among all the Republicans, conservatives. Do you think there is going to be? What do you think is going to happen this fall? You think that, Donald Trump is not, President Donald Trump is popular in his base, but he's not that popular in other parts of it. Is there enough of his base, and is his base enough upset to, or pissed off, whatever word you want to use, to not support going into the midterms?
Midterms are always a challenge for the governing party, you know, the same party as the president. It was going to be a challenge anyway. And, of course, you've had one side of the political spectrum really talk about Russian collusion, Russia, 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 Russia. And then look, oh, a squirrel, get you over there, get you distracted on that. No Russian collusion that I've been able to see. You know, Russian did meddle, but we meddle. in other elections. And I think Russia meddles in a lot more to try to undermine the trust and faith in the U.S. government. I'll give you an example. And you've asked me these questions before. We have to answer the questions. Do I get my salary for life after serving one term? Am I not on Obamacare? You know, yada, yada, yada. We have to answer that all the time. But those are not true. And I believe somebody like an entity, Russia, keeps putting that out there to undermine the faith of the American people in their governing, their government, and their governing individuals like myself. So we have to constantly answer those questions. So that's undermining. That's meddling. But we've seen all that, and that leads into distrust for the president. And then we see these things like Stormy Daniels and all that continue to undermine people's belief in the president. But it's all distraction from the good things that are going on. You know, we got a military plus up. We're going to have military building of ships and airplanes that we need to be a strong superpower. He'll use some of that budget, I believe, to start the wall with the Corps of Engineers. A lot of people believe that. We didn't fund it. I think that's probably
why. A loophole there, right? Yeah. Is that what it's called? Right. A loophole, yeah.
So, but I would also make the argument that border security is a national defense issue, and should the Pentagon do it or should it be? It doesn't matter. It's still secure in this country. So I can make that argument, but it wasn't enough for me to vote for a $1.3 trillion spending bill where we have to borrow money from China to pay it. And we will be $22 trillion in debt. Now, I started in Congress that first debt ceiling vote in late July of 2011. We were $14.6 trillion in debt.
It's almost double.
14.6 to 22, since Republicans have controlled the House and then Republicans controlled the Senate, now we have the White House as well. Don't think that's what America expected us to do. So will that play, will the $1.3 trillion spending bill known as the Omnibus of 2018, will that play into the midterms? Will the debt play into the midterms? Will, you know, what Trump, the whole Trump scandals, if you want to call it, will that, you know, whether they're true or not, whether that'll play into it? And I don't think they should. A lot of that happened before he was president. As president, I think he's done an exemplary job to grow the economy, put focus where it needs to be on trade policy to level the playing field, help American businesses, employ Americans, create American product. We got tax reform done. Americans are seeing more money in their paychecks. They're going to have an easier time filing their taxes next year. All of this is going in the right direction. But, hey, oh, there's a squirrel. You know, let's get distracted
sure,
on all this
absolutely.
Other stuff. If you understand what I'm saying. There. So, you know, I don't have the crystal ball.
No.
I'm running for re-election.
Well, what is the feeling on the Hill? What is the feeling?
I don't think they know what to feel. I don't think they know what they just did Thursday.
Okay.
As far as the midterms go. I think they solved a problem in funding government, but they don't realize that the way they did it, a small group of people crafting a bill in the back room, rolling it out, only giving members 17 hours to read it before we voted on it, $1.3 trillion, 2,232-page bill, I don't think they realize the angst that's out there across the hinterlands of America about what they just did. Now, there's a lot of time between now and November. So we'll see how that plays out. I'll go back to what I was saying. I'm running for re-election. I stand behind my voting record. I stand behind the things I champion. I voted no because I didn't believe that was the right thing for America. I voted no on a lot of spending bills because we spend too much money, we borrow too much money, and we're not taking care of the things that we need to, addressing our what's the driver of our deficit and debt, and that's on the mandatory spending side. We didn't do anything with mandatory spending in this. Had they done something with mandatory spending, or at least done something with mandatory spending before this bill, may have been more willing to vote for some of it. I mean, it was a distasteful sandwich,
right?
And they sprinkled some sweet and low on it to try to make it palatable, and it just wasn't enough.
You know, the big thing, moving on, the big thing about the NRA and guns and the Second Amendment, right? There seems to be a lot of question. What do Americans need to possess? Do they need to possess? Was that the original intent? And I don't know if you saw any of the for the march that they had on Saturday. A lot of the kids don't even know what the Second Amendment stood for and right. what an assault weapon is.
Right.
And I know you're supported some by the NRA.
Well, I I'm not only supported by the NRA, I support the NRA.
Okay.
You know, I'm a lifetime member of the NRA. We're about even on what they've given me and what I've given them.
Okay.
And my membership dues and being a lifetime member and what they've given me in campaign contributions. So let me start with saying this. We have failed this generation and probably later generations in our public education system, not teaching enough, not saying they don't teach it, the foundational documents of this country, the Revolutionary War, what happened to the colonials leading up to their frustration where they declared their independence. They didn't just state, hey, we're not going to be part of England anymore. They declared their independence, which is strong. They told King George, you're not going to tax us without representation. We're tired of paying for your wars in Europe. We're tired of the redcoats coming at our home with a general warrant and seizing whatever the commanding officer wants. We're tired of being an occupied force where they can come in, kick us out of our house and occupy our house. I paid for that house with my hard-earned money or built it myself. They were sick and tired of what they saw as tyranny. And I think what our youth today think, well, you know, there were some people got fed up with a little tax on tea, and so they had a party and dumped some in the Boston Harbor, and that led to the Revolutionary War. No. I mean, you've got to understand all the fervor leading up to that. And then you have to understand that, you know, the shot that was heard around the world was where? Do you remember that? That was the Battle of Concord, right? Mm-hmm, so right. Concord and Lexington Green, but Lexington, Massachusetts, were some of the first skirmishes in the Revolutionary War. Why did the Battle of Concord happen? Because the British redcoats were going to seize the weapons and the gunpowder of the colonialists, the Continental Militia. They were going to exercise the original gun control. That's what tyranny does. They take the weapons so you're no longer a threat to their ability to force you or enslave you to do their will, their bidding, whatever they want you to do. So the original,
one of the original skirmishes. So what does that have to do with today, Jeff? I mean, you know, that's past news. Yeah, I mean, that's what they say. That's
so if you don't understand history, then you're doomed to repeat it. And if you don't understand what I just told you, then you don't understand the premise behind the Second Amendment. And look, I really believe the Constitution was written, but then the states would not ratify the Constitution because it didn't go far enough. It set up a government, but it didn't affirm the rights that we believe were given to us by our Creator. If you go back to read the Declaration of Independence and then a preamble, they required the states, which, let me say this, folks, the states created the federal government, not the other way around. So in order for the states to create the federal government, ratify the Constitution that did that, they required something extra. And what they required were 10 amendments to the Constitution we now call the Bill of Rights, right? And I believe they put the Bill of Rights, they put those amendments in a certain order. The First Amendment. When I ask you about the First Amendment, what do you think about first off? Come on.
Freedom of the press.
Right, because you're in the press.
Absolutely.
But the First Amendment deals with freedom of religion first. Because the First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof, nor will they abridge the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press, the right to people to peacefully assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances. Right?
Right.
Redress of grievances. First Amendment. Off the top of my head, I wasn't reading that, folks. So if I missed a word, okay. We addressed freedom of religion first because that's what our founders believed was one of the most important rights to affirm. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights does not give you any rights. It affirms the rights that were given to you by God. The Second Amendment, the second thing they addressed after those in the first, is a well-regulated militia being inherent to a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And everybody says, well, you know, nobody needs an AR-15 to hunt with. I'd be glad to hand them my Constitution and the Declaration that's in that same book and ask them to find the word hunting in there. I'd also be willing to ask them to find the word education in there. There's a role of the federal government's enumerated in the Constitution. The Second Amendment affirms the right for the American people to keep and bear arms because our founding fathers understood that an unarmed citizenry is susceptible to tyranny. And look up the definition of tyranny. It's oppression. It's slavery. It's all of that. It's a strong government that enforces or imposes its will upon a populace. And when people are disarmed, and I can point to numerous examples around the world, and I will real quickly, Nazi Germany, Stalin's Russia, or Soviet Union, Mao's China, and Pol Pot's Cambodia. And I could go on to talk about Rwanda. I could go on to talk about Venezuela. When they disarm the citizenry, then the citizenry are basically enslaved by the government. Our founding fathers did not want to see that tyranny happen in America, and so they gave us the right to keep and bear arms, not to hunt with, but the right to fight tyranny and protect our very liberties that are affirmed in the Constitution of the United States and its Bill of Rights that were the first 10 amendments. So I believe, Anne, that we have failed to teach these very core principles to multiple generations now in the public education system, because there's a lot of history to teach.
Well, there's that. There's civics. How does the government work? How do all these things plumb together? We're not doing that.
But just talking from history, you know, you got the Revolutionary War, but they're teaching the Pilgrims and why they came, and most people think they just came for a free land, but there was a religious persecution. They teach the Revolution. They teach the colonial U.S. They probably skip over the War of 1812 somewhat, probably mention it, but it was another battle against the British, and then we'll move on. Then they get into World War One. You know, Archduke Ferdinand was killed, started World War One. Probably don't talk about the Doughboys. Don't talk about the trench warfare. Don't talk about the deaths of the Canadians and the British and the Europeans, and the U.S. had to come to their aid, and we won World War One. Armistice Day. They don't talk about all that. They hit on it. If you're a teacher listening to this, I'm not blaming you for any of this. I'm just stating what I perceive to be some of the problems is we move too rapidly in the 180-day school calendar to get through all of this. To get on World War II, talk about Normandy, talk about the U.S., rescued the world against Nazism and against the Germanies, and they don't talk about North Africa. They don't talk about some of that. Then they get to the Soviet Union.
That, in all aspects of our education today, it is very, very slanted. But the bottom line is, what do we do about our schools, about this uprising that is coming together to try to do something to prevent?
These kids are scared.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely.
And I sympathize with them. I played baseball, and my colleagues were shot at last year. So I'm not immune, and members of Congress aren't immune to being targets. I was on the assassin's list. So I was a target for a hitman, mm-hmm. an assassin. So I got a little different perspective than most people think about
this. Well, you wouldn't want to have guns then, right? Because therefore you wouldn't have been shot at.
No, thank God somebody named David Bailey had a firearm. He was used to stop an active shooter. A good guy with a gun stopped a bad guy with a gun. Same thing happened in Maryland where you had a good guy with a gun, a police officer stopped an active shooter. He had the courage to actually go into that school and do that. The guy in Florida had a gun and had a job. He had one job to do, and that's protect the children of that school as a resource officer. But cowered behind a car and didn't even go in to see if it was a male, female, kid, man, whatever, that was doing the shooting. Look around the corner and see what it is, assess the situation, and radio back. He didn't even have the courage to do that, much less draw his weapon and stop the shooter from killing our kids. And so
what's the answer, Jeff?
And so we've got a bunch of kids that are scared.
Right.
They're taking to the streets, but they're misguided because of the things I mentioned earlier, because they don't understand the second. They're looking for somebody to blame, and the left has used the NRA as the... Absolutely. The NRA didn't shoot anybody. The NRA is a group that's been around since, 1875 or 1895, one of those. It's been around a long time, to champion and stand up for constitutional rights. And it evolved into the Second Amendment, but it was really about training. And they did a lot of training after the Civil Rights era for the African-American community about firearms. So the NRA is not to blame. But they're looking for a scapegoat, and they found one because the left and the mainstream media has propagated that scapegoat. But this is a group that's championing a constitutional right that they firmly believe in, and they're not the scapegoat.
So what's the answer?
The guns, taking the guns away, aren't the answer.
What is the answer?
The answer is, let's spend some resources to harden. Let's do away with gun-free zones. What we've done is created areas of opportunity, soft targets, and as a military term, places where people that want to commit acts of crime.
Whose responsibility is that? The federal government, the state governments?
Federal government passed a law in the 1990s, the Gun-Free Zones Act, put out originally by Joe Biden, and then it became part of the 1994 Bill Clinton initiative. And And then we created these gun-free zones at school. I understand why. They didn't want gangs and people to bring guns in school, and that was really what it was targeted, to make a safe environment. What they've done is created an area of opportunity, a target of opportunity, soft target, for people wanting to commit crimes. And we need to, first off, address the gun-free zones, and then address how we address the gun-free zones. Do you allow more resource officers? Are law enforcement officers taxed already with the resources that they've given? If you talk to Sheriff Davis, he would tell you. They just don't have the manpower or the budget to do that. Okay, there's something to address from the state level and the federal level. Hardening the schools, you know, buzz through doors, airlock areas, more restricted access to schools. But look, teenagers are teenagers, and they're going to prop doors open so they can go out and do whatever. I mean, hey. Right. Talking about kids here. So there are things that we need to do as a nation, and I'm willing to direct federal dollars toward helping hardening targets, help pay for resource officers. I believe in a school marshals program where if you fly, you believe there's an air marshal on that plane. Somebody has got a firearm that can stop a terrorist. That's just what we believe. Why not have a school marshals program where we believe there's somebody in that school that access to a firearm that they can draw, long gun or handgun, to stop an active shooter? We don't have to know who it is. Mm-hmm. And the teachers... Nobody has to know who it is. They just have to believe that there is somebody, and there needs to be somebody that has access to a firearm that the administration and law enforcement knows. So when they grab that firearm, they also grab a vest that identifies them to law enforcement. When they come on the scene, there's an active shooter, they're not shooting the wrong person. So, I mean, how long does it take to open up a handprint identified safe that drops open after you put your hand on it and identifies you're the only guy that can open that or girl, and grab that gun and that vest, put the vest on, that's 2 seconds, you got the firearm, you've just loaded it, and you go stop an active shooter and protect those children when needed. The rest of the time, that gun's locked up in a safe and nobody even knows it's there. So I'm advocating for that. Give that person the training. Because you've got an active shooter situation, you've got kids and you've got walls and other things that you've got to shoot around, you better know what you're doing. You know, we've got some special forces guys from South Carolina that have offered a plan to Molly Spearman, offered a plan to Reed Allison, talked to the governor's office about it, that would give the training necessary for those type people. There are answers to this that are beyond gun control, but the rally in Greenville the other day said the only thing... cheaper to purchase. The only thing you can purchase cheaper than a AR-15 is a politician. And they were directing that on NRA contributions. Mm-hmm. There were signs, no money for the NRA. There was, I saw some of those signs. I mean, really? NRA gives me money because they understand that I understand the value of the Second Amendment. And they support, just like Planned Parenthood supports people that support abortion. And they give them money every year. You're a special interest group because you're a broadcaster, and the Broadcasters Association is a special interest group.
Sure.
Have they given me money? I'd have to look. But they come and talk to me. They advocate for broadcasting issues because that's their special interest. They support people that understands, and they're on the committees that actually have jurisdiction over broadcasting, broadband, spectrum, and all these other things, and they support people that understand that. So it's less about that. It's less about gun control, and it's more about doing the common sense things.
Our government is not real good at doing common sense things.
No, government and these rallies aren't advocating for common sense things. They're advocating for 5-gallon buckets of rocks to be thrown at a shooter. How far can you throw a rock?
Not very far,
I couldn't throw a baseball to home plate the other day and wear shows on the first pitch.
And you threw it out. How embarrassing.
Did I just tell that over there?
I didn't ask. You
I
told
didn't
it.
Make it over the plate. I'm sorry. Okay. But I didn't warm up either. But it gets to the point that most of these active shooters have used long guns. Not all of them. Cho used a handgun in Virginia Tech. Killed 32 people. But it wasn't an AR-15, so it doesn't fit the narrative, and we don't talk about Virginia Tech and Cho anymore. But if somebody's got the standoff capability with a rifle, that means that a rifle travels further and is accurate at a long-distance standoff. If they've got the standoff capability to shoot you, which the shooter in Alexandria did, by the way, you're not going to hit them with a rock. David Bailey couldn't hit him with a 9mm pistol, and he was trained to do so by the Capitol Hill Police because he had a handgun versus a rifle. Okay, well, you're going to throw rocks at him? I'm all for teaching these kids self-defense, and, you know, first thing you need to do is run. Don't hunker down. Run. Get out of there.
Right.
You know, the flee and flight mechanism's got to take, we need to address that. Are there ways to get out of a classroom without going out in the hall? Do doors open out to the outside? And that creates a whole other area of opportunity that we saw up in Townville. So there are a lot of things to talk about. And I want to applaud, you know, the governor and Molly Spearman for actually trying to address this and think about what the right thing to do without reacting just in a gut instinct reaction, you know, just, you know, knee jerk.
Right.
And trying to think, what is the best thing? What can we get the most for our money to protect our children? And the federal government's involved. I'm involved. I'm having conversations with Molly and my legislators in the State House and the governor and governor's chief of staff about some of this and what role do I play from the federal government. And I promise we're not going to take guns away.
Well, that's a big issue. I think it's going to be a huge issue going into the fall election. And one last thing, because I know you got to go. Trey Gowdy stepping down. OMG. What do you think?
Yeah, it's going to be a loss. I mean, he brought so much to the table from a prosecutorial standpoint. America witnessed his ability to interrogate a witness and really lead them down a path they didn't want to go down and get the answers to the questions. So his voice is going to be missed. I wish him well. I don't know what he's going to be doing. I think we'll find out sometime before January. There's a race going on in the 4th District, and I'm watching that just to see who my colleagues are going to be up there. New colleague will be up there. And, you know, I'm going to miss Trey. But, you know, Trey's been the four horsemen that came in together, me and Gowdy and Mulvaney and Tim Scott, have kind of all, you know, gone our own ways to some degree, different committees. Tim went to the Senate, Mick with the OMB at the White House. Trey's on two important committees, chairman of one, but lead guy on the Russian investigation on Intel. So he's been really distracted and busy. I'm on energy and commerce, and so never had those committees. Just don't spend that much time with him anymore. But he's there, and we're part of the delegation. I know what he believes. I know who he is, and I'm going to miss him.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So it's a big change from 2011.
Yeah,
it is.
But, you know, that's things change.
Absolutely.
You know,
things change.
That's a song title or something. The more things change, the more they stay the same or whatever.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, we sure appreciate you coming by this morning. I know you've got a busy, busy schedule. You're going to be over there at Lander this afternoon, 3:30 to 4:15, talking about energy and commerce. So people want to find out more about what you think about that, they should come by and see you there.
Yeah, I don't know what Lander's rules as far as attendance go, but it's an energy forum. I talk with some of these young minds about energy and you know, share a lot with them. I hope we can, you know, I call it a robust talk. I remove our blinders, understand some things, robust acronym, to just try to have a dialogue about energy and we'll see. I kind of do a TED talk when I talk about energy, because there's energy poverty around the globe, and this nation's been blessed, so we can help the world address energy poverty and improve the lives of so many through our natural resources and exportation of our natural resources to other countries and help them enjoy some of the things we take for granted. And one of the simplest things is keeping babies alive in a neonatal intensive care unit. If you have intermittent power or no power at all, you're not going to keep that child alive, and your infant mortality rate's going to be high. We take that for granted here in the United States, that if we have a child that's premature, that child's going to live and, you know, be able to keep it alive. You don't have that in a lot of third world countries, but we can improve the lives of so many through energy, and energy is a segue to improving lives, and I'm going to talk about some of that today.
All right. Well, Lee, you'll be able to do that. I know you've got a full packed day, and your assistant over there is watching us through the window here.
Yeah, he's tapping his watch. We gotta go. So, let me just say this: thanks, Ann, for having me on, and you know, it's great to be back in the district right now, especially as we move into the Easter season. And you know, I'm focused on you know, the crucifixion and resurrection of my Savior, and the resurrection is what it's all about, because He lives today. So I'm glad to be home and spend time with my family about that.
Well, it's good to have you on the air with us, Jeff Duncan.
Yes,
we miss you on the air. So
I miss you. We'll be back.
Come back and see us again, and call us and call in, because we're always here on the air.
There you go. And always looking for good people like Jeff Duncan to come on.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
All right. That's going to do it. I'm finished. It is time for South Carolina Radio News. Bye-bye, everybody.